So, first of all, this is not the master class. If you're here for the master class, you came a day too early. So, Jorgen asked me to postpone the beginning of the master class by one day because he couldn't come. But since everybody was going to be here anyway, I felt maybe we should do a pre-class. So today is the pre-class, and if you're here for the thing that's advertised here, it begins tomorrow. Okay? The URL that on which I will post anything that I will be post is, hopefully you've seen it before, but if not, it's up here. So basically you go to my website, which you can find using Google. Then you go to either class or talks, because I couldn't decide if this is a class or a talk or a series of talks. Okay, so let's go to, say, classes, and then it's this class in 2012-13. Okay, and you can also find it via the other route. So anyway, that's all. So today should be completely informal. We're not really starting with what the main subject is. I will say nothing about the main subject today. Really nothing. Okay, not even the introduction. That comes tomorrow. So today I just wanted to talk about a few well-known knot invariants, some very well-known and some a little less well-known, and it's only to get ourselves into the spirit. Okay, so I wanted to talk about the Kaufman bracket, the Jones polynomial, the Alexander polynomial, and Hovanov homology. And there is a fair chance that very many of you will be dead bored, because very many of you already know all of this. Well, so be it. This is not the master class. This is something else. Okay? So I'm going to start with the Jones polynomial. With the Kaufman bracket. Oh, sorry, maybe, so again, this is not yet the master class, but the apology is also for the master class. So you see, I know how to prepare a talk. You basically sit down and prepare what you will say for an hour. I also know how to prepare a class. You kind of have a general scheme and you actually prepare the details during the class when it runs for a whole semester. I have no clue how to prepare 2 weeks of sort of intense everyday meetings, okay? Because I just don't have enough time to prepare. I wouldn't have enough time to prepare everything I would normally want to prepare. So basically you should expect a little bit of loose preparation, and you should expect that formulas or you know, conventions will not be totally fixed, because I don't have time to fix them. And I'm going to define the Kaufman bracket right now, and I really hope I'm using the right conventions, because again, if I were to prepare, it's more than I can carry in my memory, 2 weeks of conventions. Okay, so I'll start with the definition of the Kaufman bracket, and hopefully I'm giving you the right definition. Okay? And again, I'm pretty sure that all of you have seen, or I don't know if all, but the vast majority have seen it before, so I'll go relatively quickly and then move on to the Jones polynomial and Alexander polynomial and Hovanov homology. Okay? So, and when we're done with that, we'll call it a day. Okay? So, first of all, what's the subject? So, again, it's not the subject of the master class, it's the subject of today. Okay? So, the subject of today is to understand a little bit about knot invariants. So, what are knot invariants good for? So, I want to ask myself whether this is equal to this. So, the trefoil knot is equal to the unknot. Modulo, so what are these? These are either knots, which have a topological definition, and I will not give it right now, or you can think of these as just pictures in the plane, but then I have to say, what are the relations between the pictures? So, modulo Riedemeister moves, you know, I didn't even have enough time to make sure that I remember how to spell Riedemeister. So I think it's right, but I'm not 100% sure. Okay? So modulo Rademeister moves, and there are three of these, and let me remind you what they are. So there is the Rademeister 1, which says that if you have a line with a kink on it, you can replace it by a line without a kink. There is the Rademeister 2 move, which says that if two strands go one over the other, then you can replace it by two strands that are non-interacting. And there is the Rademeister 3 move, which says that if you have a crossing and a strand going under it, but sort of above the crossing, so under in one sense and above in another, then you can replace it by a strand that goes still under, but below. Again, depending how you put your axes. Okay? Now, of course, all of these stand for several families of moves. So, I mean, things could be oriented. So I should say that typically my knots will be, in fact, almost always my knots will be oriented. And here I could choose whichever orientations I want, provided it's consistent between the two sides. Okay? Also, I should say that Rademeister 1 is typically ignored. So often you can set up things so that Rademeister 1 will be satisfied, but typically it's not worth the bother. And the basic reason is that Rademeister 1 is about sort of kinks, and these kinks can be moved around the knot freely. So suppose you have a trefoil with an extra kink. Using Rademeister 2 and Rademeister 3, I can slide the kink to wherever I want. Okay? So, I should disable my screensaver. So at the end of the day, not modding out. So suppose you don't mod out by Rademeister 1, then basically you can still move all the kinks that you ever need to play with to some one corner of the knot and then count them. So at the end of the day, and I'm not being too precise, at the end of the day, the difference between diagrams modulo Rademeister 2 and 3 and diagrams modulo Rademeister 1, 2, and 3 is a single integer. Essentially, the count of the number of kinks. So a knot theory is much more complicated than a single integer. So, ignoring this single integer or not ignoring this single integer is relatively harmless. So, almost always I will ignore it. Are you okay? Are you with me? Am I totally wasting your time? Okay. So how do I show that these two things are equal or not equal? One way to decide is to construct invariants. So what is an invariant? An invariant is a map, a function. Well, actually, it's sort of the theory is that the Inuits, the Eskimos, the people living up far northern Canada, have like 50 different words for snow. I don't know if it's true. Okay, so similarly, mathematicians have 50 different words for functions. So there is the word function, there is the word mapping, there is the word transformation, there is the word operator, there is the word...
invariant.
What? Invariant. Good. So what's an invariant? It's just a function. It's a function on the space of equivalence... In general, it's just a function. In the particular case of knots, it's a function defined on equivalence classes of planar diagrams modulo these relations with values anywhere. Okay? But you see, sort of different names for the word snow sort of correspond to sort of slightly different meaning. You could be talking about wet snow, dry snow, I don't know what else. Fluffy snow. So likewise, you know, you don't really say, so you know, one example for the for an invariant is the identity. You could choose the identity map, right? And strictly speaking, it's an invariant of knots. And in fact, it's a complete invariant of knots. Okay, so two knots are equal if and only if they have the same invariant. But really, when you say invariant, sort of the cultural sort of extra meaning that the word carries is into a simple-minded space. And furthermore, it should be computable. So you should have somehow a mechanical way to compute it. The values should be in some space where deciding whether two things are equal or not is relatively easy. And that's it. Okay? So typically, simple-minded space will mean integers, polynomials in some variable, or something else which is in which equality is relatively easy. Okay? So this is not the master class, but I will start with the same procedure that I will apply in the master class. Unfortunately, I forgot my camera, so I'll have to use my cell phone. But my cell phone is at the correct distance from the screen. So every time I complete a blackboard, I will take a picture. And these pictures will eventually make it to this website. You'll see. Okay? So, please remind me. So if I ever get too enthusiastic and I start erasing a blackboard before taking a picture, please remind me. Okay. So this was an introduction to the introduction to today. But anyway, now let's start with the first invariant. The first invariant is the so-called Kaufman bracket. The Kaufman bracket is a function bracket which takes as an input a knot diagram D, and later I will show that it's well-defined modulo these relations, okay? And which has values in rational functions, in fact with integer coefficients, in some variable q, not rational functions, Laurent polynomials. So polynomials in q and q inverse. Okay? And let me start with the definition. And by the way, you know, maybe we should have some system, I don't know. You should put a hat if you're bored. And then if I see that everybody is wearing a hat, I can move on. But I don't know if how we should... You know, basically just fall asleep if you're bored. And if I see that everybody is asleep, I know that I can move on. So how's the Kaufman bracket defined? So the initial... The basic thing is that we define the value of a crossing, and I will explain this in a minute, to be some coefficient A. A will eventually be replaced by Q, but I'm starting with A, okay? Times the so-called zero smoothing, which I believe is this. You know, rather than believe, let me confirm. No, apparently my convention is the convention I have here is not the convention I remember. So it's A times the zero smoothing plus, so this is the so-called zero smoothing, and plus B times the so-called one smoothing, where the one smoothing, I believe, is this. But again, my notes say the opposite, so I'm not sure what to do. But also, I used to have a thumb rule for distinguishing zero from one smoothie, and I'm not sure I still have it. But it's roughly as follows. So you think of this as an interchange, and if you, when you enter it at level zero and make a right turn, right, if you enter it at level zero, so you enter it below, and make a right turn, you'll get this line, so you get this smoothing. The same if you come from here, if you make a right turn starting from level zero, you'll get the other line here. Then it's a zero smoothing, and if when you enter at level one and make a right turn, then make right turns, you get this smoothing, okay? Anyway, what does this mean? So this is a so-called skein relation, and skein relations are to be used elsewhere and often. So basically, if you have a knot, and somewhere inside this knot, you have a picture that looks like this, namely, for the trefoil, you'd have it in three places, then you can replace it by, so you can replace the whole knot by A times the bracket of that knot with the crossing replaced by this, plus B times that knot, plus times the crossing replaced by that. So you get, you got, your original knot got replaced by two knots, one with coefficient A, the other with coefficient B. Okay? Now, if you do this to all crossings, you will be left with a knot that no longer has crossings. So if it no longer has crossings, then it's just a number of circles. Okay? So the next part of the definition is that if you have a union of k circles, and by the way, they could be nested, so if you have a union of k circle positioned in any way, then the Kaufman bracket of that is d to the power k, where d is some yet another variable like a and b whose value I'm still to determine. Okay? None of you seems asleep yet, which means that I should still be going slow. Okay? Okay. So, or you know, you should somehow find a way to tell me if you're bored. Okay. Anyway, okay, sorry, I have to learn the room. That's another thing. I wonder how to turn off this. Okay, I'll just switch to this board. So I need to check whether the Kaufman bracket is an invariant of knots. Okay? So I compute the Kaufman bracket of the hard side of the Rademeister move. And I really need to know, should I do it or... Yes, okay. So I compute the Kaufman bracket of the hard side of the Rademeister move, and basically there are four possible smoothings of this thing. There is the 0-0 smoothing, so 0-0. There is the 0-1, there is the 1-0, and there is the 1-1 smoothing. Okay? And let's see, so the zero smoothing means that when I go inside at level zero, I make a right turn. So it will look like this over here. And then when I come back in from the level zero, I make a right turn. So it will look like that. So that's the 0-0 smoothing. And it should be coming with coefficient, well, since I did the zero smoothing twice, it should be coming with coefficient a squared. Then there is the 0-1 smoothing, which would be coming with coefficient ab, and basically I'm changing this from 0 to 1, so it will look like this. And I suppose I'm supposed to write brackets around this, but I'm too lazy. Okay. Then there is the, oh, I suppose that was the 0, 1, so now let's do the 1, 0, the opposite. So I'll get BA times, I'm flipping this one, and I'm not flipping the top one, so it looks like that. And finally, there is the 1, 1, where, which comes with coefficient B squared, and well, that means flipping both things, so it will look like, I guess, the mirror. So it looks like that. Okay? And then I can just simplify it, and hopefully eventually I will get to the right-hand side, which will have only that, because that's the right-hand side. It has no crossings. So let's see. First of all, okay, the key to the simplification is that every circle will eventually count as D. So I can remove this circle and replace it by a factor of D. Okay? And then when I do that, I note that the picture I have left here, and the picture I have left here, and the picture I have left here are topologically the same, are the same as diagrams in the plane. So really, I have this picture times A squared plus ABD plus B squared plus B squared, and then I also have AB times the other picture, which is this one. Now this I want to be equal to 1 times the right-hand side of the Rademeister move. But that forces relations on AB and on AB and D. So basically, I want to have that the coefficient of this will be 0 because it does not appear on the right-hand side. So I should be getting A squared plus ABD plus B squared is equal to 0. And I should be getting that A times B should be 1. So A times B should be 1. And this implies that B is equal to A inverse. And once B is equal to A inverse, you can substitute it into here. And you find that D is equal to negative A squared negative A to the minus 2. And Rademeister 2 has been is now satisfied. Okay? Yes?
Sorry, you're omitting the brackets and the...
Yeah, I'm omitting the brackets everywhere, so there should be a bracket around. Every time I write a little not picture, it really should mean bracketed. Okay? Now, so again, tomorrow I'll have a better camera, but I look. Okay. So, claim, the thing that we got satisfies Rademeister 3 automatically. Okay? So, in principle, I should be checking Rademeister 3 and ignoring Rademeister 1, but Rademeister 3 could give further constraints on A and B, and if it did, it would kill the Kaufman bracket. But a miracle happens, and Rademeister 3 is automatically satisfied. So let me do it very quickly, and then move on. So let's check what the bracket of one side of Rademeister 3 is equal to. So basically, I can... So I will apply the relation defining the bracket, but only on one of the crossings, only on this one. So I will get that it's equal to A times this plus B times that. Okay? But if I will do it to the other side of Rademeister 3, So let me draw the other side of Rademeister 3. I guess it's this. And again, apply the Kaufman relation only in one place. I will be getting A times this plus B times that. But these two are simply equal, and these two are not equal, but are equal modulo Rademeister 2, which I've already, well, not quite proven, but I've already fixed. I already fixed the coefficient so that Rademeister 2 will be satisfied. So this is also equal to this, and Rademeister 3 is now checked. Okay? So now the Jones polynomial is actually not quite this. This is still the Kaufman bracket. To get the Jones polynomial, you check Rademeister 1, you find that it fails. It fails by a single multiplicative constant, which essentially, as I said, has to do with counting kinks. So in order to fix it, you do the following. So you define the following. You let J of a link L or a link diagram L to be minus A cubed. So A cubed is the multiplicative failure of Rademeister 1, raised to the power the derivative of L. The derivative of L I will define in a minute, but all it does is essentially to, it does the right thing to counter the kink, the mistake that has to do with the kinks, times the Kaufman bracket of L, and by convention, it is divided by the Kaufman bracket of the R naught, but this is just a single factor, it's not important. And in fact, again by convention, this turns out to be a polynomial in A to the fourth. So by convention, people said Q equals A to the fourth. So, or make the substitution, A is Q to the 1 over 4. Okay? So now this is a polynomial or a Laurent polynomial in Q. Laurent because A and B both appear and B is equal to A inverse. Okay? So I'm left with telling you what the derivative is. So for the derivative, you look at all crossings, and for each crossing, so for the derivative of a link L, is the sum over all x, which is a crossing in L, of the sign of that crossing. And the sign of a crossing is defined by a certain right-hand rule, which, you know, this one I remember, but the right-hand rules that will come later, I will consistently mess up. But anyway, you hold your right hand on one of the two strands with the thumb pointing to the direction of the flow. You check whether the fingers point with or against the flow of the other strand. In this case, it's against. So here the sign is minus 1, and had it been the opposite, the sign would be plus 1. Now, again, this is the thing that fixes Rademeister 1. It's not terribly important. Without it, you'll just get almost an invariant of knots. Also, let's think a little bit like computers, which is what I love to do all the time, and you'll have to suffer through it a little bit. So let's think a little bit like computers. How hard is it to compute the Kaufman bracket? So if you have n crossings, each one should be split into either a zero smoothing or a one smoothing. That's a total of 2 to the n possibilities. And then each of the 2^n possibilities is then followed by a little bit of computation, like counting how many circles you actually get, taking the polynomial d, so d is now a Laurent polynomial, right? So taking it, raising it to the power of the number of cycles. So, I mean, there is a little bit of work for each of the 2^n possibilities, but basically you have an exponential computation here. How much computer time is involved here? Well, linear. You just list the crossings, and for each one you either take a plus one or a minus one. This is counting. This is real computation. So this is hard. Sorry, this is computationally hard. This is computationally easy. Okay? So the bulk of the work is here, and then a tiny bit further is here. Okay.
The denominator is just needed as a normalization?
It's just normalization. It's not important. If you remove it, you get a completely equivalent invariant with equally powerful, equally difficult to compute. You know, and there are good places where you don't normalize this way. It's almost a choice whether to normalize it this way. Well, not almost. It is a choice whether you normalize it this way or not.
And what is it exactly? This bracket of the circle or the unknown?
So you know, our initial goal was to separate the trefoil from the unknown, and we haven't yet, because we haven't computed it. Okay, we've shown it's an invariant, but we haven't computed it on even a single thing. So let's do it. Okay, so let's compute the Jones polynomial, first of all of the unknown and then of the trefoil. Okay, so what's the Jones polynomial of the unknown? So it's equal to minus a cubed raised to the power the right. Sum over crossings, it's the empty sum, so it's zero, times the Kaufman bracket of, well, a circle. The circle has no crossings in it, there is nothing to be smoothed. But anyway, it's this divided by itself, so it's one. All of this with the substitution A goes to Q to the quarter. Since A does not even appear here, the substitution does nothing, so it's 1. Okay, hopefully the trefoil will be more interesting. But you see, so let's now compute the trefoil. Computing the Kaufman bracket, Sergei, just to be clear, this is not the master class on UVW not and all that nonsense, okay? You can stay, but it's not the master class. This is just sort of random lecture. Okay? So let's compute this. But you see, this computation will already take eight things, right? We have to compute with each crossing has to be either an A or a zero, be zero smooth or one smooth, and that's over my IQ to do eight things, right? And also make sure that I do all the signs right for all of them and the factors right for all of them. That's already over my IQ. Okay? So already for this, I will write a computer program. Okay? Now, I have to tell you that this is sort of my general philosophy. When I do math, I mean, and I so far failed to pass it to my students, but, you know, maybe one day I will succeed. I mean, the moment you need to do eight computations, it's already better to write a computer program. In fact, the moment you need to do one computation, it's already better to write a computer program. Because, if only because, you know, once you start playing with the computation, you realize that you've written A where you should have done B. You realize that your conventions were wrong. It's so much easier if you have a program to just modify the A to A inverse and then recompute than doing it by hand, where you just get pages that are more and more messed up. So, I mean, it's really useful even for something so small to write a computer program. So let me write a computer program for this, okay? My own language, the language that I tend to always use is Mathematica, but you could do it in any language equally well. Okay. So first of all, I need to know how to represent knots on a computer. So here is a lovely representation. First of all, you number the edges of this diagram. It doesn't matter how. Okay, my convention is to start somewhere and then do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in this case. But for the purpose of the program, it just doesn't matter. I mean, I could replace. All I need is distinct names for distinct edges. So, for example, I could replace edge number 2 and call it Sergei. Okay, it just doesn't matter. Okay.
What is an edge for you? Shouldn't 1 and 6 be the same?
No, so I hereby declare what an edge is. An edge goes from a crossing to a crossing. By the way, often the name edge means from crossing to crossing, and the word arc means uninterrupted sort of a thing that can be written without raising the chalk. But it's completely, you know, you have to be, every time you say something, you have to be clear what you say. Here I mean just from crossing to crossing. Okay, so I will just represent the knot as a list of the crossings that appear in it. So, and each crossing I will mark as the letter X for crossing, right, xing, and then I will list the edges that are next to it, and there are 4. And my convention will be that I will always start from the incoming lower and go counterclockwise. So the first crossing here will be 1, 5, Sergei, 4. Okay? So X1, 5, Sergei, 4. Okay? And then the next crossing, and again, it doesn't matter in which order I list the crossings. So the next crossing, I suppose, will be this one. And I suppose this is the incoming lower. So this will be X 5, 3, 6, Sergei. 5, 3, 6. You know, Sergei, I'm sorry, I'm turning you into a 2 again. Okay? And then finally, there will be here X 3, 1, 4, 6. 3, 1, 4, 6. And then my convention, so since this is a planar diagram, my naming convention will be to put all of this inside brackets and start it with the letters PD for planar diagrams. Okay? And I leave it as an exercise for you to prove that from this information you can recover the knot up to a tiny bit. So in fact, really you can recover the knot only as a diagram drawn on a sphere, not in the plane. So, you know, if I take this diagram and rewrite it this way, right, so basically move it around infinity, the crossings don't change. So that I cannot see. Okay, but that's still the same knot. Okay, so I mean, you can recover the equivalence class from this. And in fact, the only thing you cannot recover is the is having to do with moving edges over infinity. Okay? So anyway, so let me enter the knot into the computer. So K is equal to OE. Okay, sorry. Okay, this is probably too small, isn't it? Can you all see it? Sergei, can you see it?
No. Yeah, just on the titles. K equals
K. Here. Okay. Can you see it, or is it too small? Well, let me make it larger. The only problem is that I can't even see my mouse. So I can make it larger. 100, 50. Okay. So K is PD of X of 1524, 1, 5, 2, 4, comma x of 5, 3, 6, 2, comma x of 3, 1, 4, 6, and here's my note. Here you go. The computer does nothing, it just leaves it as it is. Okay? Now, let me start with, by the way, how am I doing on, I suppose there are two things. First of all, I'm supposed to take a break at some point. My preference is to go straight and not take a break. Is it okay? By the way, did I take a picture of that? Anybody remembers?
Yes, you did.
Yes, we did.
I did, okay. So, okay. Now I need somehow a convention for smoothings. Yeah.
That's a very naive question. In the representation that you have with your these crossings, is anything that you write down corresponds to another?
No.
Can you write down nonsense?
No, you can write down nonsense. And in fact, in some sense, the topic of the master class, which is not starting today, is exactly this nonsense. Because anything you will write will still represent a so-called virtual knot, or a V-knot, and more or less, okay? And in some sense, the topic of this class will be sort of the algebraic side of knot theory. So knots reduced to algebra, or more precisely, what will happen is that a listing like this kind of represents a knot without the planarity condition, without the conditions that it will be embedded in the plane. Already here it's not the plane, but S2. But an arbitrary expression like this represents a knot drawn on an arbitrary surface modulo that the surface itself doesn't matter, that you can remove and add handles, so only the crossings somehow matter. And that's exactly what V knots are. But anyway, this is later in the 2 weeks. I don't know anything about it today. Yes?
Do you have an algorithm to determine the surface on which it can
yes.
be drawn?
Okay. Yes. It's easy. I mean, yeah, of course. Okay. So the next thing is I need representations for smoothings. Okay? So my trick will be to kind of add another animal to my notation, and the other animal will be, well, sort of dots or points. So, you know, when you compute brackets, you need to turn this into A times this plus B times that, okay? And here, this will be numbered in some way, so I suppose I, J, K, L. So what I will do, I will introduce points, where points really represent sort of a part of a path, which goes from I to L, and here there will be a point that will go from J to K, and here the ends will still be labeled the same way, but there will be points in the middle with the letter P on them. What does it mean? It means that X, I, J, K, L, this rule becomes X, I, J, K, L goes to A times a path from I to L plus B times a path from J to K plus B times a path from I to J and a path from K to L. Okay? So let's type it in. Okay? So let's take K. Let's take K. In fact, this will be output number one, so it will be k, to which I apply the rule, wherever you see an xi, j, k, l, you replace it by a times p of, what was it? IL, PIL, P, JK, plus B times P, IJ, P, KL. Okay? So here is T1. It's the same planar diagram, right? But every crossing was replaced by a linear combination of two things. Okay? But now what I really want to do is to want to look at all eight possibilities. Essentially, I want to apply the distributive law. Okay? So what I will do is I will let T2 be T1, in which I replace the PD by multiplication. So now it's a product. Okay? But I want to expand this product. I want to apply the distributive law. So let T3 be expand of T2. Ah, and now that's a big mess. What's wrong with that? So, what is this? So each term here, I wish there was a, do you know if there is a way to lower the screens here, or how would this be? Lower the screens, lower the... Sorry, I mean, I... Okay. So, here, the a squared means that I took two zero smoothings, and the b means that I took one smoothing. And as a result, I got a path from 1 to 4, a path from 1 to 5, a path from 2 to 4, a path from 3 to 6 twice, and a path from 5 to 2. Okay? So basically, each summand here represents a replacement of the three original crossings by a pair of smoothings, by a pair of paths. Okay, so somewhere here there will be the factor corresponding to A cubed. Okay, the factor corresponding to A cubes, presumably will be something like right, it will be, I think it is this. So you will have, well, with a point here, and a point here, and a point here, and a point here. So you have, and a point here, and a point here. So you have a path from the point connecting 6 to 3, and you have two such points. 6 to 3 are connected twice. So let's check it. A cubed has a... Maybe that was 1 to 4. Oh, 3 to 6, right? Yeah, 3 to 6. And indeed, I have twice the path connecting from 3 to 6. Okay? But you see, that's no good yet. I need to count cycles. Right? So I need to, basically, if I see a path from 1 to 4 and another path from 1 to 5, I could replace it by a single path from 4 to 5. So basically, I need to apply yet another transformation of the form path from A to B times a path from B to C can be replaced by a path from A to C. And in fact, this I should do repeatedly until I'll only have loops. Okay? So, I'll take... I'll set T4 to be T3, to which I repeatedly apply the rule, path from A to B times path from B to C is a path from A to C. Okay? And now it's a lot simpler. But now, every time I see a path from a thing to itself, it's a cycle. Or, in fact, if I see a path from, well, basically a square of a path from one place to another, that's also a cycle. And any such thing is a factor of D. So let's make T5, be T4, to which I apply the rule, every place you see a path from a thing, from a thing to itself, you replace it by D, and also every place you see a path from A to B squared, you replace it by a D. And you know, if we're at it, that's enough, okay. Okay, so now we have, we can almost read the Jones polynomial, the Kaufman bracket, right? So we have three times we get an A smoothing, sorry, a zero smoothing, two one smoothings, and it comes out a single cycle. Plus, three times we get twice a zero smoothing, once a one smoothing, and we get two cycles. And maybe the most fun is the last term. So if you do all zero smoothing, you get three cycles. And that's exactly what I found here. Okay? Well, I'm almost done. So let's do T6 will be T5, to which I apply the rule. So first of all, B is really A inverse, 1 over A. And second, D is really, negative A squared minus 1 over A squared. And I think that's it, right? Okay? So T5, ow, ugly, painful. What do I do now? I guess I want to, so you see I made a mistake. I should have expanded this. Okay, and that's not quite the Jones polynomial yet, so T7 will be, take this and replace A by Q to the quarter. It's not going to make it much more interesting. And then also divide by D, which is, so you know what, come to think of it, maybe I should have divided by D already here. So in fact, I should have divided by D here. Ouch. I should have what? Simplified rather than expand? Expand and then simplify. Simplify and then expand. Sorry, that's just... Okay. So, this is the Jones polynomial up to... a factor of a cubed to some power, which we could compute once and for all, and it's easier to do it by hand than by computer. You just count the crossings. So up to some factor of a to some power, this is the Jones polynomial. In particular, it's not 1. So the trefoil is different from the anode. Okay? So, I want to say a few words, and then perhaps, and then ask you whether to take a break or go on. But maybe I'll just find the program that I wrote in advance. So, in advance of this, so yesterday, I wrote I prepared a version of the program to run in with you. So first of all, I'm inputting a standard package ouch, sorry, let me restart. I'm inputting a standard package, and the only purpose is to have some pre-made knots. Second, one of those pre-mades is knot is the torus knot 5-4, and let me plot it for you, or let the computer plot it for you. So this is the knot. It's called the torus knot, because you see it's sort of, there is a torus here, and there is a strand that wraps around the torus, and it wraps around five times going one way and four times going the other way, hence it's the 5-4 torus knot. If you want to know what is the PD diagram, or what is the PD notation for this, let's do torus knots, torus knot 5-4, and write its PD. It's a whole mess, but that's the point of having it pre-done. So here is this mess. And now, here is the program I wrote before, but made a bit more compact and also debugged a bit. So the debugging is that I've declared that P has no order. Completely by chance, we never needed to use the fact that PAB is equal to PBA, but I in principle I should make this declaration, so I'm making this declaration, and then I'm making the exact same definition as before except compactified. Okay? So let me enter this definition. This will be the only time that I write something in so much detail, don't worry. And then let me compute. And it's taking time. So basically I'm taking a torus knot, computing its PD, which would give this, feeding it into Kaufman bracket version 0, and feeding it into timing, which will just tell us how long it took. And the reason it's taking a long time is because it's a long meaning 18 seconds, is because it's an exponential time computation. I had to take, there were 15 crossings, I believe, here. I had to do 2 to the 15 operations, each of which is slightly messy. So it took a significant amount of time. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is to show you that there is an alternative program which goes much, much, much faster, even though it's slightly more complicated. So let me enter the alternative program, KD1, and run it, and it gave the same answer, and it took 0.06 seconds. Okay? So...
Is it not exponential again?
It's still exponential, but with a completely different exponent.
Which means that both are hopeless.
Well, okay. But they become hopeless at different times. So the original program is hopeless when you, well, 15 crossings you can do, 20 crossings will be, you know, much harder. And this program will work for not with 100 crossings. Okay? So what's the difference? What's happening here? And the reason, there's a moral I want to take home from this. And the moral is that it's better not just to understand knots, but also half knots. Okay? And this program computes the invariant of a knot by, first of all, cutting it into halves, more or less. So let me explain. So, I think I didn't take a picture of this yet. Okay. So, first of all, there's something called a tango, and a tango well, essentially, is what you get when you take a knot and cut it in half. So, you know, when I draw knots, it's always the trefoil, because it's the only one I know how to draw, okay? And if you cut it in half, it means, well, you pass a line here, and then on one side of the line, or on the other side, you see a half knot. What's a half knot? Well, I guess it's a line, and above it, I suppose here you will be getting a picture that looks like this. Okay, so that's a tangle. Okay? More conventionally, people write tangles inside a disk. So really this goes from infinity to infinity, so it's more convenient to write tangles inside a disk. So a tangle is a piece of a knot drawn inside a disk. Okay? If you're... Something is wrong here. No, it's fine. Sorry. That's a perfectly legitimate tangle. Now, often, if you can reduce the computation of your invariant to a computation of invariants of tangles, it becomes much more efficient. So, you know, if you have a very complicated knot, okay, and it has 20 crossings, it will take you 2 to the 20 time to compute it. But if you're able to reduce the computation to a computation on the right half and then a computation on the left half, you will have only 2 to the 10 computation on the right and 2 to the 10 computations on the left. And twice 2 to the 10 is a lot less than 2 to the 20. And in fact, how would you compute the left or the right? Well, you'll cut it again in halves. So you'll end up saving a great deal. You will have to pay a price. And the price will be that it might be difficult to glue the two half computations, to assemble from the two half computations the full computation. So hence this does not shrink the computation to zero, but at least potentially it's great improvement. So repeatedly later we will try to reduce computations to or extend invariants to be invariants of tangles in such a way that that if you have two tangles and you want to glue them together to a bigger tangle, you know how to do it. Okay? So let's do it for the Jones polynomial. Sorry, for the Kaufman bracket. For the Kaufman bracket, it's particularly easy. In fact, the Kaufman bracket was essentially defined via tangles. Right? The definition was, well, essentially had to do with tangles. Okay? So basically, if you want to compute the Kaufman bracket of a tangle, the way you will do it is as follows. So you will use the same rule. So this goes to A times this plus B times that. Also, you will use the rule that a circle is equal D. Sorry, this is a circle, not D, zero. Okay? And you will simplify as much as you can, but not beyond what you can. So if you have a tangle like this one, you will smooth wherever you can. So you will get a sum of many things, including, you will get, at some point, a thing that looks like this. Okay, I've smoothed the three crossings in a certain way. This circle I will replace by a factor D. But the other two lines, since I still don't know how they will close, I will keep them as unclosed. So I will get a sum of things, including a factor of D times a smoothing that looks like this. Okay, basically this edge and that edge. Okay? So at the end, this will become a certain linear combination with coefficients A's and B's and D's, and in fact, with coefficients Q's, because A's and B's and the D's are all functions of Q's, so you will get a linear combination of crossingless and cycleless smoothings that can be placed with four endpoints. So basically, you will get some coefficient C1 times you will get C1 times this smoothing plus C2 times that smoothing. Okay? Now, suppose I wanted to glue two such things with each other. Well, I have all the information I need. Suppose I wanted to, you know, suppose, well, you know what, I will not say. I think it's clear enough. So I've just extended the Jones polynomial, or more precisely the Kaufman bracket, to an invariant of tangles. And now suppose I want to compute the invariant of some complicated knot. Well, again, the philosophy is this cut and assemble thing, but the practice is in fact even easier. So what I will do is I will, where's the eraser? So what I will do is, so okay, suppose I have a complicated knot. Well, here is a complicated knot. Okay? I will sort of have an evaluation. I wish there was colored chalk, but I will have an evaluation for front. I mean, I will start by evaluating nothing. Then I will decide that okay, so this is the evaluation front. It starts here, and then I start pushing it up. So everything above this, everything below this line is evaluated. Everything above this line is to be evaluated. Since I've pushed the evaluation front above this crossing, or more precisely, since I've included this crossing into the evaluated part, I will replace it by a linear combination of smoothings. I will simplify as much as I can. This will give me a linear combination of smoothings as over there. And then I will push the evaluation front one step further, or I will include another crossing into the evaluated part, and again replace it by a smoothing going this way or that, the linear combination of the two possibilities, simplify as much as I can, and push for further. Okay? And in fact, that's exactly what the program does. So, I define KB1 of a knot to be KB1 of a knot with nothing evaluated and the current value of the evaluation equal to 1. So I start with nothing evaluated, and the value for yet is 1. Then if I have a PD diagram, and a part of it is already inside what's been evaluated, and the web is this combination of what I've so far evaluated, then the way I evaluate it is I do the following. First of all, that's a messy line. Maybe I will not explain the syntax, but I will just tell you what it does. Basically, I will look for the crossing. So again, I have a part that is evaluated, that's been replaced by a linear combination of smoothings, okay, with no cycles. And then there are other crossings outside. I will look for the crossing outside that is connected to this part with the most number of edges. Okay? So I find the position of this crossing, I look at the PD, I look at the diagram at that position, and I replace that crossing by essentially the A smoothing plus the B smoothing, and simplify as much as I can, and continue. Sorry, the syntax is a bit hard, but I think the principle should be relatively easy. So again, at each stage, I basically insert the crossings one by one, and each time I insert the crossing that's connected to the part that's already been evaluated by the largest number of edges, so as to make the boundary of the part that's been evaluated as small as possible. And again, the effectiveness was demonstrated already. Yes.
So it's not essential that you do it, you evaluate them in that order.
The program will work no matter how, in which order you insert the crossings.
Right.
But
I mean, so you sort of
expand the complexity of the invariant. So the more points you have on the boundary, the more smoothings you can write. Mm-hmm. So you want to somehow scan through the knot so that at any given stage the number of boundary points will be as small as possible.
Right.
So hence I try to I try to insert the crossings that will increase the number of boundary components the least.
Right.
So basically, I think I'll stop here. Let me tell you what my plan for. I'll stop with the Jones polynomial right now. Okay, but let me tell you what else I wanted to do today, and you should tell me whether you want it done and how you want it done and when. Okay, so. So I wanted to tell you about two other things. I wanted to tell you about the Alexander polynomial. And again, this is just general background. We should know what it is. Okay? So it's like the Jones polynomial. In some sense, it's simpler. In some other senses, it's harder. And I want to tell you a little bit about it. And the other thing is I wanted to tell you about Hovanov homology. And Hovanov homology is a certain lift of the Kaufman bracket to some homological setting. It's not really important for anything that I will do in the 2 weeks to follow, except it is some sort of a challenge to keep in mind. Okay, if I do things, you will always want to ask yourself, can you do Hovanov to them? Okay, so it's more cultural than it's cultural and background than really important. So, okay, and maybe the last thing is, so should I continue right now? Should we take a break? How was the level? How was the? Tell me something. It's not yet the master class, but you see, if you tell me things now, it might improve the master class when it actually starts. And again, all of this in some sense is materials that I expect that most of you have seen, even though maybe some of you have not appreciated how easy it is to actually program these things.
But
there was
no statements yet.
Well, I've computed the Jones, I've proven the invariance of the Jones, I've defined the Jones. Jones got a Fields Medal for this. And I've proven invariance and all. I mean, this is following Kaufman, right? But, and then I've only, and it's background. Maybe, you know, one more thing about the job. Well, again, I don't know. What should I do? You tell me. Is it sufficiently interesting to continue talking about invariants, or should I? Well, I cannot start with the class itself, but I can stop. Because the class will. Tomorrow's topic will be different, but this is all sort of relevant background. Maybe I'll do one more thing about the Jones polynomial, and then tell you a bit about Alexander, and then tell you about Hovanov. But the one more thing about the Jones polynomial, I will do. Let me just do that. Okay. So one comment on the Jones polynomial, and I certainly will get it wrong. So comment. So let me compare the Jones polynomial of an overcrossing. So an overcrossing is a class one crossing, with the Jones polynomial of an undercrossing. Okay? So the Jones polynomial was just Q raised to some power times the Kaufman bracket, where the power was 3 times or minus 3 times the Rife. And the contribution for the Rife from a single crossing is either plus 1 or minus 1. Okay? So these two things will be, not the same, but will be coming from the A smoothing and the B smoothing, and each one will be coming with some other factor of Q here, with some different factor of Q here. Okay? So this will amount to some factor of Q times the zero smoothing, plus some other factor of Q times the one smoothing. This will amount to some factor of Q times the zero smoothing, except the zero smoothing of this crossing is the one smoothing of that crossing. So you will get some factor of Q times this plus another factor of Q times that. Okay? And now I can multiply this by some power of Q and that by some power of Q so that this term will cancel that term. So that if I take the, so that the factors of Q will be the same, so that if I take the difference, this will cancel that. It's just a matter of basically shifting the powers of. So basically, if I multiply this by q to the 1 half, and I multiply this by q to the minus 1 half, and then I subtract, the result will be that this term will cancel that term. However, these two will not cancel. So you will get q, sorry, no, it's not the 1 half, it's q to the 1. It's q and q inverse. And the result will be q to the 1 half minus q to the minus 1 half times j of that. And that's all I wanted to say. I wanted to say that there is some identity, which is q times j of an overcrossing minus q inverse times j of an undercrossing is equal to, well, some function of Q times J of the orientation preserving smoothing, the smoothing in which you preserve the orientation. Okay? Again, I didn't show you the details, but the details are not interesting. The only thing to know is that both of these expand to a zero smoothing and a one smoothing, and if you shift the powers of Q up appropriately, you will be able to cancel one of the two smoothings, and as a result, you get an expression that involves the other smoothing with some prefactor. And the fact that these are the coefficients that you need it's a completely computational fact. Okay? And there is even a possibility that I have it wrong. Okay? But it doesn't matter. What I want is just to record this relation to be used later. I should say that this relation, along with J of the unknown is equal to 1, defines the Jones polynomial. So instead of using the Kaufman bracket, I could have used this relation just as well. And the point is that if you have a complicated knot, this relation tells you what price you pay when you flip a single crossing. So but you see, any complicated knot can be simplified by flipping crossings. Can be brought to be the unknot by flipping crossings. So you have a complicated knot, you flip a crossing, you get a price to pay. The price to pay is the Jones polynomial of a knot with one crossing less. So you could have recursively computed this by the same principle. So this is sufficient to determine the Jones polynomial. The reason usually the Jones polynomial is not defined this way, or often it's not defined this way, is that it's much harder to show that this gives a well-defined answer. Once you know that the Jones polynomial is an invariant, then that's a way to compute it. But it's hard to show that this is well-defined, that all ways of computing the invariant of a knot, so if you have a trefoil, you have many ways of simplifying it to the unknot by flipping crossings. So it's not trivial to show that all ways will give the same answer. But once you know that the answer is well-defined, it's a good relation to keep in mind. Okay. I said all I wanted to say about the Jones polynomial. Maybe we should take a break and then talk about the Alexander polynomial after the break.
You want to take a picture?
Yeah, I do. But and I think after the break means after lunch. So at 2 p.m. So my plan for after lunch will be to follow two handouts, and you're welcome to take copies on the way out. So one is the Alexander polynomial and its generalization to tangles, and the program to compute it, but with less detail. And the other is about Hovanov homology and no programs, but at least a definition. Okay, and I'll appreciate feedback between now and 2 p.m. Okay, so let's stop for now.